Jacksonville has been described as a religiously diverse city. However, Christianity accounts for 94.4% of the religiously identified population. What about the other 5.6%? Good morning, I'm Kyle Reese, senior pastor of Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church and board chair of One Jacks.
And I'm Nancy Bronner, executive director of One Jacks, an institute of the University of North Florida. Welcome to Faith Matters, WJCT's quarterly program taking a closer look at today's issues through the lens of faith. Today we're bringing together voices from a variety of beliefs to talk about their experience of being a religious minority.
Have you ever wondered what it feels like to be a religious minority in Jacksonville? Later in the hour, we will talk to a panel of community members about their experiences of being in that 5.6% of faith minorities. In a moment, we'll talk with a Navy chaplain about his ministry in the multi-faith culture of the military. But first, we'll look at the complexities of serving populations of multiple faiths from the perspectives of medical professionals.
Joining us now in the studio are two medical doctors who care for patients and families from many different faiths and cultural backgrounds. We welcome Dr. Mobeen Rathore, director of University of Florida Center for HIV/AIDS Research, Education, and Service, and a member of the Muslim faith. Dr. Rathore, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nancy, for the invitation.
And Dr. Rithru Graywall, a family practitioner with University of Florida Bay Meadows Family Medicine and Pediatrics, and a member of the Sikh faith. Dr. Graywall, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You can join our conversation this morning by calling 549-2937. We want to hear your views.
Dr. Rathore, let's begin with you. In your interaction with patients, and we know that sickness and disease is really no respecter of persons or faith commitment, you interact with patients from religiously diverse backgrounds. What are some ways that you honor the faith commitment of people under your care?
Well, I think it's I take care of children, as you know, and families, and no matter what faith and what background they are, as a physician, as a person of faith personally, I need to make sure that I am caring for the whole family, not just the child. And if the family is willing to express their faith and spirituality to me, I look at that as a positive, and I work with that. Only yesterday I was teaching medical students. We went to this one patient's room here at Wolfson, and the father said, "Do you believe in God?" And I said, "That was an opening." I said, "Of course I believe in God." And then he said, you know, he was a Christian faith. He said, "You know, I believe in Jesus. I prayed to Jesus." And I was able to relate to him that, you know, I pray for all my patients literally every day. And I also pray to God to give me the abilities to help treat them, because my belief is, you know, I treat, God cures.
And Dr. Graywall, what has been your experience in interacting with patients of multiple faiths?
Sure. So how I like to approach faith with my patients is I let them sort of define it as they will. I ask them, "Are you a person of faith?" And, you know, whether they bring up a specific religion or whether they talk about God or whether they talk about, you know, nature as their source of spirituality, I let them sort of define it. And, you know, it is very important in the context of healthcare because, you know, there's so much that we can do, but you know, when people become critically ill, they need to have other sources of support for them, whether that just be their family or their faith community behind them. And it makes a huge difference in how patients are able to recover and how they're able to interact with us as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Graywall, we've talked a little bit about how you recognize the faith commitments of others. Talk a little bit about how the Sikh faith, that is your faith tradition, how does that inform your interaction and inform your work?
Sure. So, you know, I can't speak for all people of my faith, but how I interpret it is, you know, the basic tenets of being a Sikh are to work hard and to, you know, share what you have with other people. So and to pray every day to God. And basically, you know, I feel like if you boil it down to those tenets, I feel like all religions are basically the same, you know, that we all believe that it's important to be a good person, to, you know, be charitable and to pray. So in that sense, I think I have that sense that, you know, all religions are basically the same. And so I don't really feel that I'm any different than anybody else. It's how we go about you know, practicing our religion, that there's, you see the little variations, but fundamentally we're all the same. So in some ways, you know, yes, culturally and you know, when you look at my religion, I'm different, but I'm no different than anybody else.
Right. Right. Dr. Rathore, talk a little bit about the Muslim faith and how that informs.
Well, I think first of all, I agree with Ritu that, you know, all religions are same. They all preach the fact that you should be caring for people. And in my faith, in Muslim faith, one of the names for God is Al-Hakim, which means basically physician in chief. Mm-hmm. So he's the one who cures. So I think we really take from our religion the fact that to serving people and the sick and taking care of sick is a very important part of religion. And as a physician, I take that as my almost my religious spiritual responsibility that I do my very best to take care of my patients and make them comfortable, and do my best to learn what is most new and updated so I can serve them. And that becomes a prayer for me. It's a good deed for me if I just do that.
You can join our conversation this morning by calling 549-2937. Dr. Graywall, how have you seen a patient's faith help in the healing process?
Sure. So, you know, I think it's very important when, especially when I've noticed that patients are more ill, you know, when we've just sort of diagnosed something and they're having to undergo multiple treatments or you know, just having that support from their faith community or from being able to just read whatever, you know, spiritual books, I think it makes a huge difference in how they're able to approach their illness because they have that extra layer of you know, help for that and a place to turn to, you know, when oftentimes we don't have the answers or, you know, we can't always, you know, give them the comforting words, they can get that from somewhere else. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Rathore, your insight on the ways that faith has helped in the healing process.
Well, let me tell you, many years ago when I came to the United States, I got sick and I was at a hospital in the emergency department, and it was a Catholic hospital, and one of the nuns came and said, do you want to pray with me? And I said, I'm not a Christian. And she said, well, that's okay, we can all pray. So it was a great learning thing for me as a young man. So we prayed together, and, you know, then I had, you know, so that spirituality that people have gives them comfort regardless of what happens in their illness. As a resident, I had I never forget this, an Orthodox Greek family. They had a child who had a brain cancer, really had no opportunity for cure. And I remember going in there and then saying, well, we are praying for a miracle. And you can't say anything, but I will pray with you. Mm-hmm. And the literally 2 days later, the child died, but the spirituality, the religious belief of that family was so calming to the family. They were sad, they were crying, but the fact that they had that spirituality, it, you know, because God didn't give them that miracle, but it was God's will. So I think that sort of thing, if I see in a family, I see that they're going to be stronger. It doesn't have to be belief in God, belief in, as Ritu said, in something that they can hold on to, because the reality is we don't have all the answers. We are not going to cure every patient. We should do our best, but that spirituality is such a strong anchor. And you'll often see in those spiritual patients, the families are around them.
So we've heard about the power that faith can bring to the healing process. Have either of you experienced a moment with a patient or their families where their faith has been an impediment in any way? Have you had that experience?
Yeah, I think we always have to respect everybody's faith. I am in a special situation where I take care of children, and no matter, you know, we have a responsibility as a society and as a state and their laws and such. And we have had situations where I have faced situations where the family or the parents will say, well, I do not do this because of this religious belief. And we try to, you know, work with them as much as we can. But we have had situations where we have to go beyond that and go to law or court and say, we have to do this for this child. That's a very unusual situation as opposed to an adult who has decision-making power for themselves. So yes, there have been times that we have had this conflict with the families, and there are certain groups of populations that don't believe in much of intervention. But I still find that you can work with them. Mm-hmm. They have their basic faith system, and you still work with them. You always want to keep that connection with them.
Yeah. Dr. Graywall, you're shaking your head.
Yeah,
so.
I agree. I've had situations that, you know, mostly we can work things out with patients and work through it. And if we get their members of their faith community involved sometimes, you know, that sometimes helps as well. As well as, you know, if it becomes too difficult, we can always excuse ourselves and you know, find someone else. That's the worst case scenario. And that very, very rarely happens. I would say for the majority of patients, we're able to sort of work through and figure out what are the sources behind, you know, behind their beliefs. And you know, once we understand, I think it makes it easier for us as treating physicians to be able to come up with a treatment plan that works for them.
Mm-hmm. We invite you to join our conversation this morning by calling 549-2937. We're talking with Drs. Mobeen Rathore and Dr. Graywall, both members of a minority religion, talking about the role that faith plays in their practice. We want to move now to sort of the personal experiences. Dr. Rathore, I've heard you speak about your experience of being a Muslim after September the 11th. What was that like? And talk about ways that you were treated in our community.
Well, it was probably one of the toughest time I've been through while I've been in the United States. But, you know, it was this is a strong community. This is a wonderful community. I remember at about 10 o'clock that night, one of my neighbors, who's a very well-established person in this community, knocked on my door. And I'll be very honest with my wife and I, we were a little concerned. Who's knocking at our door at 10:30? And we opened the door, and this smiling tall man, slim man, walks in and says, you know, you are my neighbors and you are my friends. You are good people. If you need anything, you let me know. And he just lived across the street. It was such a wonderful experience. I'll take one more thing I'll tell you. When this all was this happening, we were concerned there were always some things that these Muslims may have done this. So I remember calling my son's school talking to the headmaster and saying, I'm going to come and take them home. And he said something to me which has stayed with me. He said, Dr. Rathore, if you do that, you'll take away everything we work towards. Hmm. And with some trepidation, I said, okay, we'll leave our kids at school. So this community really, I did not experience that some of the things that you may have at other communities. I'm sure people may have in Jacksonville, but I can only say I saw people coming around me, helping me. My secretary asked me, can I have your keys to your car? I said, why is she asking for my car keys? She wanted to put an American flag on the front and the back of my car. So, I mean, those little things were, you know, I will never forget them. So I think this is a great community that sort of came around us. I'm not saying that this was a universal experience for everybody, mm-hmm. but at least my personal experience was very positive.
Let me just follow up with that. Has that changed now that we are so far away from September 11th?
I think I have not had any negative experiences, but we unfortunately, because of the high level of rhetoric, I do hear individuals being not treated well. I think especially those who may look like that somebody's view of how a Muslim is, and I'm sure Ritu can tell you some, because some Sikhs often look like Muslims in the way they dress and such. And our women have had who covered themselves, who wear the hijab, have had situations in the grocery stores, people pulling on their headscarves and such. And those are sad things, but I think these are people we should try to work with and educate, and as they are part of our community also, they just don't know.
And Dr. Graywall, Dr. Rathore referred to some mistaken identity that often happens between the Sikhs and the Muslims, and we know of some incidents around the country in recent years. What has been your experience, or have you had the experience of being confused and caught up in the Islamophobia that seems to be so present in our country?
Yeah, so fortunately, I have not had that experience either, but I remember when there was a shooting at one of the Gurdwaras in the Midwest a few years back, you know, it was a big deal because there's a lot of, you know, people don't understand our faith very well, and so when it did happen that weekend, we went to the Gurdwara here in Jacksonville, and actually it was really great because members from every faith community came out to support, and there were news cameras there, and so I think, you you know, we're fortunate that Jacksonville really is a very accepting and welcoming community. So I haven't had that experience here, but I know that that's happened, you know, not only here, but, any, you know, elsewhere as well. Because, you know, our men, not all of them, but many of them will wear a turban. And so, you know, people get confused. Is this a Muslim turban or is this a Sikh turban? And there are differences, but, you know, it's easy if you don't know, if you're not informed, to make those kinds of mistakes. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Graywall, if you could speak to the most important thing you would want the community to know about your faith, what would that be?
Oh boy, that's a hard one. you know, I guess that out of all the religions in India, I would say we're the youngest. So you know, Sikhism was founded in the 15th century, so it's not a very old religion. But in many ways, it's very much like every other religion that's out there. We're a monotheistic religion. And generally, you know, the guru who founded it, Guru Nanak, basically said, you know, all religions are the same. And so those of us who follow it that way really do feel like we're one and the same. It's just how God chose to come to our people. It's different. So, you know, we may look a little different. You know, the way that we worship is a little bit different. But essentially, we're the same as everybody else.
Dr. Athor, your words to the community.
How much time do you have? I think the most important thing I can tell people is to go to reputable resources and learn the religion. What you hear on popular media is not always correct, and it's almost never correct, unfortunately. I would invite this community to come visit us at the Islamic Center. We have a program first Saturday of each month where we say explore Islam with your neighbors. Come and we'll talk to you. We'll see that we are not any different than any other group in the United States. I think, you know, it's something that we work very hard to get the word across. But I think two important points. One, don't listen to the popular media. Almost all what they say is wrong, and learn about theirs from credible sources and come visit us.
I think one of the most important things we can do, and hopefully this conversation reminds us of that, is let every person, let every faith community speak for themselves.
Absolutely.
Because there is a lot of, oh, this is what this faith group believes. Well, let's let the faith group speak. And so you two are doing a wonderful job of that. Talk a little bit about the experiences of those in your faith community, perhaps new to Jacksonville or new to the United States. What are some challenges you see along the lines of faith that they experience?
Okay. Well, you know, I think we're lucky here in Jacksonville that we do have a Gurdwara here, and so that was a huge thing. I know for my parents, when they moved here to the United States back in the 70s, was a big thing. There wasn't a big Indian community, first of all, when they moved to Minnesota. So, and then on top of that, you know, there definitely wasn't a religious community there. So we're fortunate in Jacksonville that we do have a faith community here and a pretty well-established Indian community in general. And so I feel like there's a lot of places that we can reach out to, but I do think still there are challenges, of course. You know, the biggest being just the misunderstandings for those people who dress a little differently, who, you know, who maybe don't speak English as well. Of course, those are the biggest, I think, barriers.
We do have a caller on the line. Susan from Julington Creek, could you go ahead with your question or comment?
Hello, Susan. All right.
I think we've lost. And we have Susan with us. Susan, you have a comment about perhaps a good religious book.
All right. So, Moby, now as we are experiencing a little difficulties, it seems, with the phone, talk a little bit about the challenges that newcomers to either the United States or Jacksonville of Islamic faith.
Well, you know, we have the similar challenges as Ritu had alluded to. We are lucky we have six mosques here. We have, other thing is we have a very diverse, the Muslim community is very diverse. If you know, they're from all over the world. And I think, they face different challenges, language being a big one, and also a lot of things are cultural. I think one thing I will tell you, which is very positive, that many of these individuals who come new to the United States is, how easy it is for them to practice their own religion without fear. I think that's such a positive thing that I hear from them. But they do have challenges very similar.
Right.
And we do have Susan on the line. Susan, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to recommend a wonderful book that helps people understand on a personal level. It's called The Circle of Faith. It was written by three women after 9/11, and they wanted their children to understand what was going on in a much more day-to-day thing. And so they each had to examine their faith, and one was Muslim, one was Jewish, and another was Christian. And that journey that they took to get to know each other and their own faith, the way they lived out their faith, was just very, very helpful to me. I'm sorry I don't remember the three names who wrote the book, but it's called A Circle of Faith. And I just have enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan, for your call. And I think a lot of those things happened after 9/11. A shameless plug for One Jacks. A few years after 9/11, we were able to bring in the three women who were part of the Faith Club and use that as an opportunity to have some really good interfaith dialogue.
And we do have one question from Chuck from the Beaches. Chuck, go ahead with your question.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Good morning.
Can you hear me? I think your panelists are great. They've done a fantastic job. Wonderful Americans. The gentleman said something earlier. He said that he suggested that we should not listen to the media. And I was wondering if he could please address some of the issues. We just had two NPR journalists killed in the Middle East. We have the largest Muslim country, or one of the largest Muslim countries in the world, which is Iran, and they have certain laws. They treat women and you know, that have had affairs in unkind ways. So when we as Americans are listening to what's happening in the Middle East with radical, I'll just use the term radical Islam, the two NPR journalists that we just lost, could he please, and you made the comment that all religions are the same, and I think we all love God and we're all children, and we're all brothers and sisters.
Right.
But when we watch the news media, which he was critical of, and we see NPR journalists killed, and we see the largest Muslim country in the world, Iran, and they do things that we don't understand. I was wondering if you could address that for us.
Okay, thank you, Chuck, for your question. Dr. Rathore.
Chuck, thank you so much for that question. You know, my heart goes out to those two journalists. Don't forget, one of them was an Afghan Muslim individual. The other was an American. First of all, I think it's very important. One thing, Iran is not the largest Muslim country. Indonesia is the largest Muslim country. India has the second largest Muslim population. So there's some misconceptions that come out of popular media that I think we need to be careful about. Islam, like any other religion, does not advocate, preach, or suggest that we kill. In fact, the Quran says if you save one life, it is as if you save the whole humanity. And if you kill one, take one life, it is as if you have killed the whole humanity. The important point is that politicians will use religion to their advantage and misinterpret it. And this has happened over centuries. This is nothing new. Let me also remind that the most people who are victims of these terrorists are Muslims. They are not non-Muslims. So these people are not, who are doing these killings are not believers in the religion of Islam. They have taken those beliefs, the religion, and they have sort of totally misrepresented it. I know a lot of people have difficulty believing that. I would suggest that if anything, talking about books, there's a book that I share with people all the time not to insult anybody. It's called Complete Idiot's Guide to Islam. It is written by an American, and it's such a wonderful, explains you the basics of it. So just to make that point that what happened in Afghanistan was very tragic, but that is not the teaching of Islam.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rathore and Dr. Graywall, for joining us today. And you're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Nancy Bronner, Executive Director of UNF's One Jacks Institute.
And I'm Kyle Reese, Board Chair of One Jacks and Senior Pastor at Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church.
After a short break, we're going to hear from a Navy chaplain about his experiences in the multi-faith culture of the military. We'll be right back with more of Faith Matters.
There's a whole lot of political talk about the middle class this year, but what does middle class mean to people actually living it?
Not having to worry about putting gas in the car. Not having to say, oh, let's wait till Thursday to pay this because that's the day you get paid.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Economic stories from an American election. That is next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity in America is a multi-platform public media initiative that provides a deeper understanding of the impact of poverty on American society. Tune in to the PBS NewsHour weeknights at 7 on WJCT-TV for compelling stories of individuals and organizations addressing such issues. And log on to chasingthedreamproject.org. Funding for this initiative is provided by the JPB Foundation and Ford Foundation. Local funding provided by Wells Fargo.
When director Ezra Edelman was asked to make a documentary about O.J. Simpson, he thought, what else is there to say? Turns out, nearly 8 hours worth.
Look, if you have a jury member who can look someone straight in the face and say, yes, this was payback for Rodney King, obviously that is not the way that justice should be done.
The new documentary, O.J. Made in America, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
And welcome back to Faith Matters, WJCT's quarterly program exploring today's issues through the lens of faith. I'm Nancy Bronner.
And I'm Kyle Reese. We just heard from two doctors who provide medical care and guidance to patients and their families from multiple faiths.
And now we're going to continue our discussion about religious minorities as we hear from Chaplain Dan Stollard, a Navy commander who will soon become regional chaplain for Commander Navy Region Southeast. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
You can join our conversation at any time by giving us a call at 549-2937.
Commander Stollard, you are an active duty naval chaplain, and you minister in a multi-faith, no-faith context. So how do you, as a Christian minister, do that in that context?
Well, that's a great question. As Navy chaplains, before we come in on active duty, we have to have education, which is a seminary degree typically for my tradition. We have to have experience. I was a pastor. And then we have an endorsement. And my endorser happens to be the North American Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention. And I say that specifically because we all agree that we're going to minister in a pluralistic context of the military. Mm-hmm. And so we come in with that idea that we're going to be ministering to people of multiple faith or no faith at all.
Part of faith commitment of many traditions is the call to conversion. And in the context of the military, how have you seen that tension play out? You talk about ministering in a multi-faith context and respecting the faith commitment of all persons, and yet for many, their faith calls them to convert others. How does that play out in the military context?
Well, I think that I can look at that two ways. One, from a military chaplain's perspective, the Navy Chaplain Corps, and I can speak specifically to that. I think the military in general has the same accommodation principles. We have four core capabilities. One is provide for your own, facilitate for others, and the one I love the most, care for all. Mm-hmm. And then we advise the commander, which is a matter of religious ministry. So my function as maybe doing evangelism falls under provision when I preach, but when I facilitate, I got to respect others and not seek out conversion and or, Now, service members, now, they have to approach their faith differently. They're not chaplains. And so there is sometimes tension with people who want to convert others, but most of the time, everyone's very tolerant, very respectable.
Good. And then that transitions then into what are some positive ways that you see faith being acted out in the military context?
Now, that's what I see every day. Mm-hmm. It's extraordinary. Like this morning about 1 o'clock, I got a call to the hospital. It's a family of Catholic tradition. They were in distress. It was a very, very serious situation here. I'm a Baptist minister, and at 2:30 in the morning, I'm praying with them in a positive way, and their faith has been expressed too. So daily, we see our faith expressed positively among service members, and other people can express their faith.
And in like manner, have you experienced any negative moments when you've ministered to people who perhaps don't share your faith?
You know, that's a great question. And I've been a long time, and I can't think of very many. I mean, I've had a couple of sailors or Marines who, you know, really weren't interested in talking with chaplain. You pick up on that, but not they were not disrespectful. Mm-hmm. But not really. We folks are really open-minded.
As you've been in the Navy for a while, and you've seen new generations of sailors come in, what are some changes that you see in the faith commitment of younger adults now?
Now, millennials are different. I'm not one. I'm a baby boomer. And, you know, traditional religion has changed over time. We're seeing more emphasis on spirituality and less emphasis on religion. So individuals would be spiritual, maybe not religious. Some are spiritual and religious. And then there are those who are not spiritual or religious. And those are ones we also minister to because we care for all.
Right, right. Wonderful insight.
Do you find, have you found an additional challenge in the past number of years with our young people coming back from war situations? Does that present a particular challenge for you as a chaplain to minister to their needs?
Absolutely. That's where my heart beats. Mm-hmm. I ministered to warriors for the last, you know, decade or so. Especially when I was up at Bethesda, I was the deputy command chaplain there. We had our wounded, ill and injured there daily. They seek out faith and help for healing, not only the physical wounds of war, but the invisible wounds of war.
Is there a way, too, that the military follows up with those who have come back from combat and then perhaps retired or gone back into civilian life? You hear a lot of the struggles of former military folk who are dealing with post-traumatic stress and all of those things. And I think faith is a component of that.
Absolutely. You know, since Vietnam, we have learned a lot about caring for those who've been traumatized from war, whether it's physically or psychologically, even mortal injury. So we do care for service members. We have programs like the Gold Star programs. We have Safe Harbor, which is a care for wounded, ill, and injured. And so we care for people post-military, especially we're trying to connect the military medicine and the VA, and also have lifelong care through TRICARE.
And you have ministered to a number of people who've not only had their physical beings injured, but their souls are in great need. How do you keep going in the face of so much pain?
Now, what I heard in that was what we often call compassion fatigue. You do get emotionally involved in those you care for, and it is difficult. It's reciprocal when you're ministering to special warriors. They pour into you as much as you pour into them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you have that relationship that's positive, and it's, whether it's, you know, a shared faith or just you're sharing an experience, I think it sees you through.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, as we think about the continual battlefields across the world and miscategorizing those as religion, you know, fighting against Islam, and we've talked about kind of how that is a misunderstanding of the religion. What part do you feel like chaplains play in teaching cultural and religious competency to military soldiers and others that, okay, this person says they are Muslim, mm-hmm. let's say, but this is really what Islam is about, not what you're seeing in the battlefield?
You make a great point, cultural competencies. And so chaplains do enter into that engagement. We do religious leader engagements. We help people understand the cultural environment that they're going to be operating in. We help differentiate what religions are involved in the theater of operations that we're involved in. But we emphasize that we're not fighting a religious war.
Right.
And we are not. But we do emphasize that religion matters, and we would neglect religion at our peril. And so it's part of our conversation. Again, you know, we're not fighting religious wars, but it is important that we discuss religion to our service members.
Chaplain Stollard, we wish you the best in your ministry and in taking care of our military men and women, and we thank you so much for being with us today.
My privilege.
After a short break, we're going to hear several diverse voices of religious minorities in Jacksonville. You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT and Baptist Health are pleased to announce that Amy Robach, news anchor of ABC's Good Morning America, will be this year's afternoon keynote speaker at Girls' Day Out, September 17, 2016, Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Amy is also a breast cancer awareness advocate and author of My Breast Cancer Journey, From Fighter to Thriver. For more information or for tickets, log on to wjct.org/girlsdayout.
Sheriff Dave Daniel is one man fighting a losing battle.
Imagine living in an area that you call 911 and no one comes.
We go on patrol with a sheriff whose department is stretched to the breaking point. And fixing things would mean raising taxes.
People pretty much support law enforcement. They just aren't ready to pay for the law enforcement.
Lawless Lands on the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, HBO's comedy series, Silicon Valley.
You know, everybody in this industry, they say they want to make this world a better place, but we could actually do it. We could do it and make billions of dollars.
We talk with the show's star, Thomas Middleditch, the creator, Mike Judge, and co-showrunner, Alec Berg. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Nancy Bronner.
And I'm Kyle Reese.
Joining us now in the studio are several community members who will speak to being a religious minority in Jacksonville. We welcome Sunny Bika, local hotel owner and a member of the Hindu faith.
Thank you.
Matt Potter, a UNF student and identifies as a secular humanist.
Thank you.
And Dr. Elliot Rosenbaum, clinical psychologist and a member of the Orthodox Jewish faith.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Earlier this hour, we have given opportunity for people to express the one thing they would like our community to know about their faith commitment or their worldview. And we want to begin our conversation with you all by asking you if there's one thing that you could communicate to the broader Jacksonville community about faith or worldview, what would that be? Sunny, we'll begin with you.
Thank you. Good morning. Well, definitely Hinduism is one of the oldest religions of the world, and we're very blessed that we're here in Jacksonville, and Hinduism is definitely flourishing here. It's another name for Hinduism is Sanatan Dharma, which means eternal religion. And it's a very peaceful religion. It embraces every life. It is more than a religion. It is more of a way of life, of how you live your day-to-day life and that. Hindus do believe in one supreme God, so the misconception that Hindus believe in many gods is not true. God, however, manifests in many forms. So God does manifest to liberate souls from bondage of attachment and such. So,
thank you. We invite you to join the conversation at 549-2937. Dr. Rosenbaum, talk a little bit about the Orthodox Jewish faith and what you would communicate to the larger community.
Well, one thing that we love about Jacksonville is the Jewish community here is unbelievable. We have every branch of Judaism represented, and we all function as a family. And that's the one thing I want to communicate about Judaism. I think what's special about Judaism is that it's really not a religion. It's like Sunny said, it's a way of life. But what's interesting about Judaism is if someone does not believe in the Jewish faith, They generally speaking still identify as Jewish, which I don't think you see in other religions. If someone said, I no longer believe in my religion, they're no longer identified by that religion. But in Judaism, we do identify someone who does not believe in Judaism still as being Jewish. And the reason for that is because it's not really a religion, it's a family. And I think the family is extremely broad, extremely welcoming, and I think Jacksonville reflects that.
Matt.
Thank you. I would definitely say that the one thing that people tend to mischaracterize about, not necessarily humanists, but secular people in general, is that there's like an air of, maybe there's, where do you get your morality if you're secular? But the thing is that everyone, whether you're religious or not, every day you're making moral decisions that aren't necessarily always based in your religion, that you're just using it based in empathy or things that are just more general like that. And I definitely think that I see a lot of people not quite understanding that.
We hear from and know and see the research on millennials, and the fastest rising demographic are those that do not identify with any faith group or faith tradition. You're on the university campus at the University of North Florida. So mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about how you see that diversity and how you see that playing out at UNF.
Well, I definitely think that a lot of people at UNF, not UNF only, but in general, have some people have become disenfranchised from religion or things like that. But I, from my experience, that's not necessarily in a negative or spiteful way. Mm-hmm. A lot of people still have a very positive interactions with religious people. And for instance, I work with the Interfaith Center at UNF, and we're always interacting with different people of different faiths and things like that.
Good.
So let me ask you, how do you all react to the civil exercise of religion in our community, such as prayer at city council, public prayer in general, which is often Christian and seldom inclusive? What is your attitude about that, and how does that make you feel in your walk of life? Sonny, let's start with you.
I look at any moment that you get to pray as a positive way. So we're so engrossed in our day-to-day life, so any moment that's a moment to pause and pray, I take that upon a good time to pray. Whether it be a Christian or not, it doesn't bother me. We're just blessed to be in this country that we can exercise our religion wherever we are. And the fact that we're pausing and praying, and it's to one Supreme Lord, and that's all that matters to us. So,
Matt, how about you?
I don't personally have so much a problem with it, but I do think that there are some people who perhaps could, and I think that that might be reason to step back from it, possibly. Not necessarily in a full sense, but I think something such as a moment of silence can very much accommodate a moment of prayer for everyone, but then those people who don't feel as comfortable with it can still feel included.
And Dr. Rosenbaum, what's been your experience in this area?
You know, I believe that God is too big to fit into any one religion. And so, you know, again, very similar to Sonny's comments, that I take it as a moment of reflection and prayer. I think everybody likes to be acknowledged. And it's nice for me, you know, during the holidays when you see, you know, a menorah up at the same time as you see a, you know, Christmas tree. And that makes, I think, makes people feel good to be acknowledged. So I appreciate those experiences.
And if you have questions or comments for our panel, you can call 549-2937.
Dr. Rosenbaum, you did a perfect intro into the next question I wanted you all to talk about and think about. What are some ways that those who do not practice your faith or do not hold your worldview, what are some ways that they could honor your faith that would be affirming to you?
Well, we open our doors to anybody. We often have students from UNF who are religion students coming to observe Orthodox Judaism. When they step into the sanctuary, they put a yarmulke on their heads, not because we are looking to convert them in any way. We're actually not a proselytizing group of people. But we appreciate that that act showing that they respect our faith. So that's one way.
Sonny, what about you?
I again look at every opportunity as a way of learning. So anytime that anybody is wanting to learn and they're wanting to come to our Mandir, which is what we call our church, there's two of them in Jacksonville that are very well received. And I just look at it as a great opportunity for us to interact and learn about each other. I never look at it as a negative. And I've always seen positive in everybody that comes.
Yeah. Matt, talk about your worldview, secular humanism. How are ways that people who do not identify with that could honor or show respect for?
Well, I think that definitely one way that you could honor, it's in the name, is to, with honoring with someone of any religion, really, is to treat someone as a human first, mm-hmm. rather than treating someone as a Jew or a Muslim or a Christian, but like treat someone as a person. And like Sunny said, like it's, if you're, feel curious, like always feel comfortable asking questions or anything like that.
And we have a call from Ed from West Palm Beach. Go ahead, Ed, with your question.
Nope.
Yes, go ahead, Ed.
Yes, thank you. By the way, in your app, you sound perfectly, no matter how far away we are. I just wanted to raise a question. I think one of the questions about faith is what I call the nobody's looking part. No matter what your religion, the whole point or one of the big reasons to have a faith is the part that when there's nobody around, you do know that there's a higher power looking at you. When you can get away with something that is, quote, bad, you don't do it. And then also, you also, in most religion, you have a reward of some kind if you behave good to our orders. And that's one of the big plus on religion versus having no faith, is the part of reward and some kind of lack of reward or punishment. It's the same way society works. Imagine that if we eliminate any kind of punishment, even though we know we're supposed to behave properly, or any kind of rewards for doing good things, even though we know we should do it, probably you have a different society, not very good. And that one day where you get think of that.
Sunny, talk about ways that your Hindu faith informs your morality and the punishment of good and evil in your faith tradition.
Absolutely. One of the things that I do every day in the morning when I pray, and I put a marking on my forehead, which is called a tilak and a chandlo, which is a U-shape and a red dot. It really kind of does what you're talking about, is the fact that it is a way for us to connect with God and at all point know that you are connected to God and it's God doing everything through you and it's not you. And as long as you stay connected that way, is going back to what you were talking about, that somebody's looking out through you and you're representing God and not yourself. And I think that's important for you to know that. And I think that's what religion and all religion is all about, is to recognize the God within you so that you can do good. And as long as you're doing good, then you can be close to God.
Matt, most religions provide a framework of good and punishment for evil and speak as a secular humanist to that question.
I think that a lot of people definitely gain their morality from the religion in the sense that it holds them accountable. But I also think that we as people are able to keep ourselves responsible in those things. If you think of morality in light of reason and responsibility and empathy, you can still achieve that.
Okay. Dr. Rosenbaum, we have a lot of conversations with our friends in Judaism, and they talk about that the call to Judaism is to make the world a better place, and what's your reward for that? You live in a world that's a better place. How does your faith perspective kind of inform the call to morality and ethics?
Well, one of the things that's interesting about the Torah, what's referred to as the Old Testament, is there's not one reference to heaven in the entire Torah. And so what is the reward for good and evil? And it's exactly like you said, it's bringing heaven down to earth. We have mm-hmm. this experience, and we believe that God created us for pleasure, which I think is an uncommon view, that God is not here to punish us in any way, where he's here to give us pleasure. It's just that there's different levels of pleasure. And food and you know, going to the beach, it's a very nice level of pleasure, but having a relationship with humanity and doing good things, a higher level of pleasure, and having a relationship to infinity is we consider the highest level of pleasure, and we believe God wants us to have all of those levels of pleasure. That's why we do it.
Earlier in the show, we talked about Jacksonville being described as a religiously diverse city. And of those religiously identified in our population, over 94% identify as Christian. So naturally, during holiday seasons of especially Christmas and Easter that are so prevalent in all walks of life, in the malls, in the stores, on the radio, as religious minorities, do you feel somehow excluded from that? Does this bother you in any way? We'll start with Dr. Rosenbaum.
I wouldn't say I feel excluded. Again, I think everybody likes to be acknowledged. I love walking into Target and Publix and seeing the Hanukkah or Passover display. I think that's wonderful. We're not in New York City, and I think it's going the extra mile to make people feel welcome. So I love the holiday season because I get to celebrate my own holidays, and it's a festive. I think people being happy, as a psychologist, that's what we're doing this for. And I notice people are happier. I have less customers around that period of time. But then the family members start coming and visiting, and we get more business because people are being driven crazy.
Well, thank you so much to our panelists, Sunny Bika, Matt Potter, and Dr. Elliot Rosenbaum for being with us and sharing today. Thank you very
much.
Thank
you all. Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining us for this edition of Faith Matters. We hope this discussion has expanded your understanding of religious diversity in Jacksonville. We're committed to bringing you diverse opinions and perspectives on matters of faith, and we'll be returning each quarter with new voices to add to these conversations.
This show's producer is Sean Birch. If you missed any of today's program, you can find the podcast later today on wjctnews.org. I'm Kyle Reese, senior pastor of Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church and board chair of One Jacks.
And I'm Nancy Bronner, executive director of One Jacks. This has been Faith Matters. Thanks for listening.